Welcome back to the Monsters and Mixers podcast. We are your hosts. I am Amy.
And I'm Emma.
She's laughing for some unknown freaking reason. Being very unprofessional right now.
I'm laughing because you just cut the conversation off and just pressed record.
Hey, gotta do what you gotta do. All right, so we are back with another supernatural paranormal episode today. And since it's springtime, starting to warm up, and I know lots of people are probably going to be going out camping, doing some outdoorsy things, I figured it might be a good time for us to talk about the Appalachian Trail and the different spirits and ghosts and all kinds of eternal elemental spirits and things that reside there.
It's like folklore. A lot of it is urban legend too.
Well,
maybe not what you're talking about, but there's a lot of like oral
history
yeah. and stories like passed down generation to generation.
For sure. And I've been super intrigued about it for a long time, and it's been on my radar to do, and I keep forgetting about it, and then I was kind of trying to come up with something a little different to do this time, and it popped into my head, and I was like, ooh, that sounds good. So we are going to go ahead and dive right in. Just a little background about Appalachia. It was made
is
up
Appalachia
of...
Appalachia or Appalachia?
Appalachia. Ghosts of the Appalachian.
It's Appalachian, but is it Appalachia or Appalachia?
It's Appalachia.
I don't know.
Appalachia is a place in Florida.
No, that's Apalachicola.
Yeah.
It's completely... I think that's why it's called that.
It's definitely Appalachia. You can Google it right now, but I'm pretty sure I'm right.
It's okay. Go ahead.
Anyway, Appalachia is made up of 423 counties. It spans across 13 states and 206,000 square miles. So quite an expansive amount of land, all the way from southern New York down to northern Mississippi. The region's 26.1 million residents live in parts of Alabama, Georgia, Kentucky, Maryland, Mississippi, New York, North Carolina, Ohio, Pennsylvania, South Carolina, Tennessee, and Virginia, and all of West Virginia. So lots of people live in this region. There are some that live in towns, some that live, you know, in little areas. There are a lot of people that live still very much deeply embedded in the Appalachian Mountains. And some of the stories that you hear from there are utterly terrifying. The region also comprises 3 federally recognized and 5 state recognized Native American tribal communities, with tribal entities in Appalachian, Alabama, Georgia, Mississippi, New York, and North Carolina. So I think that's probably a pretty significant amount of the remaining Native American people in that portion
Maybe
of
in
the
that region.
In that region, yeah.
Not America, though.
No, not in America as a whole. I think it would be great to live amongst the beautifully dense woods. It might seem ideal and picturesque to a lot of people. And I'm sure it probably is during the day. But at night, the people of the Appalachians close their curtains tight in hopes of avoiding any of the monsters lurking in the darkness. It is said by many that no matter what, you never look out your windows once the sun has set. Why? Because you may find yourself looking into the eyes of something terrifying and sinister like one of these creatures. When I first started at researching, I expected to find a couple. There were like 10 plus different things that live in Appalachia. And the first was one I had never heard of before. It's called the Wampus Monster or Wampus Cat. Actually, way back in the day, it was called cattywampus, which is where we get that phrase. You ever heard things are kind of cattywampus? Mm-hmm. So the Wampus Cat or Wampus Monster is believed to be either a protector to the Native Americans or a cursed Cherokee woman, depending on the story. And at the beginning, you said there's a lot of folklore and oral traditions, and this is one of those cases where there is very much a big contrast between what one story says and what another says. They both kind of believe that it is a woman from a Cherokee village, or Cherokee tribe. But as far as her actual purpose is where the contradiction comes. The Wampus Monster has been a part of Appalachian folklore for centuries. While the original story may have changed over the years, her or its actions have remained the same for most of the people of the region. The Wampus Cat is said to snatch animals in the night, destroy people's belongings, leave behind random objects. A lot of the things they find are like random rakes and clothes that don't belong to them and buckets and weird things.
It's very cat-like.
It is very cat-like, like just bringing stuff. And also, people say that the scream is just terrifying. It's like this maniacal scream that goes off into the night. Regardless, the Wampus Cat's main mission for most people seems to be to disrupt the peace of the Appalachians. The original story goes a little something like this. The Wampus Cat was once a beautiful Cherokee woman. Her husband would often leave the village with the other men to go out hunting and bring back food. Before each trip, the men would gather in the woods to ask forgiveness for the lives of the animals they were about to take and to seek supernatural help in their task. But women were forbidden from ever seeing these sacred rites. But this woman's curiosity consumed her. She wanted to know the secret magic. She begged and begged her husband to reveal the rites to her, but he always refused. So one night, as the men set out into the forest, she took matters into her own hands. The woman wrapped herself in a cougar skin and quietly crept through the woods. She came upon the clearing in the forest where the men had gathered. She hid behind a rock and watched, enthralled, finally seeing the secrets she had so long desired to see. She crept closer and closer to the men in the circle, wanting to take in every detail until she got way too close. The sorcerer leading the ritual spotted her and immediately saw through her disguise. The men of the tribe grabbed her and dragged her into the circle. As punishment for breaking the taboo, the sorcerer cast a spell on the woman. The cougar skin she had wrapped herself in became her own skin. She became a strange mix of cougar and human and was cursed to live forever alone in the woods, never again enjoying human company. And so the Wampus Cat was born and roams the Appalachian Mountains at night, traveling up and down the hills, in and out of the valleys, forever wandering, ever alone in the mountains. There are some who say that when she steals animals or ruins things on the farm, she's acting out of her anger and resentment from being cut off from the rest of mankind. There are some who say that she will roam the mountains forever, lurking around the places where men live, sad and angry she will never be able to rejoin them. Which is a very sad thing. That would be terrible.
Is this like a Native American story, or is it like created by people who aren't?
No, this is a Native American story. Okay. It's still very much told in the Native American tribes I think it's more the non-Native American people that live in the Appalachians that see her as more mischievous, and the Native Americans see her as a protector, like goes around the outside of the area trying to keep them safe, and whereas the others that live in the Appalachians are more inclined to think that she is not a protector, but more so just a person wreaking havoc. Mm-hmm. So it just depends on whose story. There are a few other stories that were similar as to the origin, but I didn't include them because the general ending is the same. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, what? Any thoughts on Mrs. Cattywampus?
It's pretty standard, I feel like. As far as folklore stories go, yeah.
I mean, every good villain or superhero has to have an origin story. I guess this is the Wampus Cats.
I don't know if she'd be either villain or superhero.
Well, she'd be a villain to the people whose homes she was stealing their animals from and killing. And yeah. Oh, I just thought it was kind of a cool story.
But she didn't do anything wrong.
Well, she did. She broke her traditions by daring to be a woman and wanting to...
Misogynistic tradition.
...to see what happened.
It's like Salem Witch Trials.
Very much. All right. Our second being is the Wolfman of the Appalachians. The Dwayo, sometimes called the Snarly Yow, is a legend that comes out of the Appalachian Mountains also. The Dwayo is a humanoid creature that is reported to stand between 7 to 9 feet tall, weigh over 500 pounds, and is described as a large canine-esque mammal seen roaming the hills near Wolf County, Kentucky, and other parts of the mountains. The Wolfman is bipedal and has fur similar to a bear or a gorilla. I found that kind of...
Why is he called the Wolfman?
I don't know.
He has no traits of a wolf.
He should be like a bear man or a gorilla man. I don't know why he's called that. It is believed to live in caves and has been seen around the area since the 1970s. Sometimes it is described as being on all fours like a giant dog. Other times, the creature is said to stand on two legs and use its arms like a human being. Some reports have the creature being a mix between a dog-like animal and a human being. It is often described as being wolf-like in appearance. There you go. There's your answer. Other reports have the creature with a long, thick, furry tail. And some describe the creature with long hair, while others with short fur covering... Wait. Yeah, short fur covering its body. The fur is described as dark, and in some cases as being black in color. It has a dog-like nose, vicious temper, and will attack any creature in its path.
Something tells me these people aren't seeing the same thing.
And it seems like...
Vastly different descriptions of things.
I mean, that kind of goes for a lot of creatures that you see.
No.
Really? I feel like there's always one or two accounts that you have to remember.
I think if you ask like 10 people what their physical description of a dog is, it's going to be vastly different.
Well, yeah, it depends on what kind of dog they saw.
No, it's still going to be like four legs... Long, whatever, ears.
Unless somebody sees a Doberman Pinscher or a pug, they look vastly
different.
There
is still a human description, or like a, just a general description of a dog. These like descriptions are vastly different.
The only difference are the length of the hair and the color.
And the way they stand. Yeah. And the legs and the how human-like they look. And if it's hair or fur. If it looks like a bear or a gorilla or a wolf. Those are three very different animals.
I also feel like there's probably not a lot of streetlights where people are seeing these animals.
Seeing all these dogs with mange.
Maybe. That would be a very large dog. 500 pounds? That's a huge animal. That's like really, really big.
Where does it say 500 pounds?
At the top.
Oh, yeah.
Red. It's
seven and 9 feet tall.
And 500 pounds. Yeah. That is very large. Now you made me lose my place. Anyway, there have been... many reports of attacks on dogs and other pets, and also cases of cattle mutilations. There have also been documented reports of campers, hunters, hikers, and park rangers who have claimed to hear the menacing howls or have spotted glimpses of a Dwayo. The reports describe it sound like a wolf or a very large dog, again with the two different comparisons, but the dog is howling. Another creature of the Appalachian Mountain wooded area in Maryland is the Snallygaster, and it is said to be the mortal enemy of the Dwayo. It is described as being a bird reptile chimera. Is that chimera?
It's chimera.
Chimera. Yeah. For those of you who don't know what that means, that's like a bird reptile hybrid. So you see that a lot in
bird for those back home.
Yeah, you see that a lot in like cryptozoology or whatever that.
And a lot in like Native American like.
Stories. Yeah, so if you hear somebody reporting that they saw Emma says a chimera.
I thought a chimera was also, like, had characteristics of a dog.
I don't think it has to. I think it's literally just a hybrid of a couple of different things. The first mention of the Dwayo werewolf was in 1944 in West Middleton or Frederick County, Maryland. The witnesses to the account claim that the creature was heard howling in the wooded area and left footprints behind in the mud. For a while in the community of West Middleton, they were disturbed by the descriptions. However, no other sightings were reported. This claim, while documented, was dismissed as no other sightings were seen for many years. The second sighting was reported in the newspaper, the Frederick News Post, on November 27, 1965. when they published a detailed account of an encounter with the creature. It was reported that John Becker, who lived near Gambrel State Park, heard a noise one night and went out to investigate what it was. He spotted a large wolf-like creature that was as big as a bear. The creature attacked Becker and he fought it off, which is, holy hell, how do you fight off something as big as a bear?
A shotgun.
It didn't say he killed it. The creature then ran into the woods and was not seen again by Becker or his family. So not only did he fight it off, but he scared it. And it's like, nope, I'm not coming back. The creature... Hold on. For several weeks after this report was published, there were several sightings and people heard strange howls for weeks. By late December of 1965, these stories began to fade as the community returned to normal. So it's kind of one of those situations where I feel like you have a lot more sightings of things when there's fear because everybody's on edge.
It's like
mass hysteria kind of thing.
Area 51 and like Roswell. Like the second the Roswell info came out, everybody was like, oh my gosh, well maybe those like weird lights that I saw or like that weird thing that I saw in the field one day was also like a UFO.
Which makes sense. I mean, I'm not saying these people didn't see it.
Well, when it's like something that's never been introduced to you and you've previously seen or like heard or experienced things that were previously inexplicable, once you get like a general explanation for what it could be, then it starts to make sense.
I also attribute it a little bit to if I see something crazy, I may not be inclined to tell anybody about it because I might think they're going to think I am off or weird or whatever. But if somebody else says it and there's like a collective of people saying they saw the same thing, I might go ahead and come forward just because there's safety in numbers and then you'd feel a little more accepted and less vulnerable in doing that.
I found the exact definition of a chimera if you want it.
I do.
So it originally started out in Greek mythology as a fire-breathing female monster with a lion head, a goat body, and a serpent tail. But it has recently just kind of been used as a general word for any mythical animal with parts taken from various animals.
So it's like the Frankenstein.
Like a hybrid.
Frankenstein of mythology.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you.
Sure.
For your...
Like when you see things with like chicken body and dog head. It's like kind of...
So Baba Yaga... What's that?
Baba Yaga?
Baba Yaga would be a chimera.
But she was just a lady.
No, didn't she have chicken legs?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
I guess she would be.
So, if you have not listened to that episode, you can find some information about Baba Yaga, the chicken leg witch. All right, so there weren't a whole lot of sightings until autumn of 1976 when two men were driving on Route 77 on a private road. The two men reported this creature also was wolf-like in appearance. And then in 1978, two park rangers were near Cunningham Falls when they spotted a wolf-like creature running on two legs there also. So it kind of gives you a little more credibility, I think, when you're a park ranger because they are more likely to know what the animals in the area are supposed to look like and how they're supposed to behave. As opposed to just, if I were driving through, I wouldn't know what any of those...
You would know that it's weird to see something that looks like a dog or a wolf running on two legs.
Well, yeah.
That'd be the end of my life. That's like the scariest thing I could possibly picture ever.
It is pretty creepy.
I don't like that at all.
Yeah.
Reminds me of the... What was that Stephen King werewolf thing?
Cycle of the Werewolf.
Cycle of the Werewolf. Like, we had the graphic novel. I think it only is a graphic novel.
Yeah.
But we had the pictures, and it was this freaking wolf man on two legs.
We still have it. Yeah, it's very well.
Children don't read it. It's a little risque.
I'm hoping a lot of children aren't listening.
Don't let your children read it. It's a little risque.
I don't want to be scaring children. All right, so that's our wolf man. Not to be confused.
I don't like him.
You don't like him?
Mm-hmm.
Scares you?
Yeah. Okay. That's scarier than the other one.
Yeah. Not to be confused with Wolfman, another creature cryptid said to roam the Appalachians, is none other than the famous Bigfoot. The Appalachian Mountains are believed to be a haven for Bigfoot. And some towns and counties have even gone as far as to ban hunting or killing of Sasquatch. It's like on the legal books where you can't.
Do you think this is just like, I know that in the eastern part of the United States, and then, like, the west, the Midwest, and, like, places like that, like, Bigfoot is a huge part of everyday life. Like, I even know, like, back home in, Pierre Marquette? The big park in Grafton?
Mm-hmm.
Like, there were signs in Pierre Marquette that said, like, drive slow, Bigfoot crossing. And then, like, you'd go to, like, a market or, like, a farmer's market, and there'd be, like, all this Bigfoot memorabilia that I own a lot of.
Mm-hmm.
But do you think that, like, if you go to, like, California or Texas or these other places that you see it everywhere like that? I feel like it's not.
I don't know if you'd see that so much, but I think it's very equivalent to going to Salem and buying all of the witch stuff and going to Area 51.
Well, no,
because
that's an actual
things.
Historical event that took place. Bigfoot has never been, like, confirmed nor denied. So, but it's, like, this weird thing that's, like, ingrained in the culture of certain places in America.
I feel like it's every place wants to be special and stand out for something.
Like, if you go to Plymouth, West Virginia, and there's
yeah.
Mothman everywhere.
Which is...
It's just kind of... Yeah. I don't know. I feel like if you just, like, step to places that are, like... Go to places that aren't the Midwest or the eastern part of the United States, he's probably not, like, everywhere.
I mean...
In national parks, at least. Well, there's not going to be signs.
We're going to talk a little bit, because Sasquatch or...
Sam Squatch.
Or Bigfoot, or whatever you want to call him, has actually been spotted in Tennessee, Kentucky, Virginia, and West Virginia. The eyewitness accounts describe the creature as having different colored fur, which I think you can attribute to maybe the amount of sun and things.
Or you, I mean, if it's like any other animal, like...
Different colored fur?
Yeah, two same colored cats can give birth to different colored babies.
They can, but I've also seen a lot of cats that are getting bleached from sitting in front of their windows. Like,
well, yeah, it's just like when I go outside in the summer a lot, like, my hair turns red.
Well, I didn't know if you were going to start shitting on it like you don't on
no,
the last.
No, I love Bigfoot.
You're like, oh no, the colors. Is it different? Him. Is it a dog? Is it a wolf?
Even if he's not real, I like talking about
him. Don't say that.
He's what, real. Is he going to come down in New Orleans?
No, I'm just saying, no, that'd be the Rougarou. I'm saying he is definitely real. Okay, so... The most commonly used descriptions, though... Wait, I've skipped one. Eyewitness accounts sometimes say that the Bigfoot has super dark black fur and glowing green eyes, which I'm not sure about the glowing green eyes. Maybe he just has beautiful hazel eyes. Who knows? But the most commonly used descriptions are that Sasquatch, which comes from some Salish word that I can't say, which means wild men...
Salish? Where's that from?
I think it's some Scandinavian language. That commonly is a large, hairy, human-like creature believed by people to exist in the northwestern United States and western Canada. It seems to represent the North American counterpart of the Himalayan region's monster, the abominable snowman or yeti. Which is, I think, how you get the different fur patterns and different colors. Kind of similar to bears. Like, you get polar bears and grizzlies and black bears based on how they need to adapt and survive.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, if Bigfoot does exist, they've existed for so long that they had to have evolved at some point.
Oh, yeah.
Like, even if they started out a certain way, like, they probably don't all look the same.
Yeah, very much. Bigfoot can be anywhere from 6 to 15 feet tall.
Oh, my God.
Standing erect on 2 feet, often giving off a foul smell, which is kind of rude. There's no...
He doesn't bathe.
I was going to say, there's no bathtubs. And either moving silently or emitting a high-pitched cry. The footprints that they have found have measured up to 24 inches in length and 8 inches in width, which is huge.
You know what they say about big feet? Sasquatch.
Yeah. Got big feet? Yeah, big feet. There has been a Soviet scientist, Boris Porshnev.
Yum, Borsh.
Did not like Borsh. Who suggested that Sasquatch and his Siberian counterpart, the Almas, could actually be remnants of Neanderthals. So possibly that missing link in the evolutionary chain. Who knows?
Hmm.
Yeah. So
is there a missing link in the evolutionary chain?
There's always been like that little adage, like we found the missing link, because the jump from people that think, you know, like monkeys and then humans, like, are the primate, evolution that there should be something along the way that's was like a monkey.
That a caveman?
No, because cavemen are gone and we still have monkeys and primates. So where's that thing in between? So that's where the Bigfoot would come in. Like, you know, kind of that kind of thing. So as of late, I personally, and I know that you've watched a lot of shows with me, have seen lots of people being out camping and they hear like a twig snap in the woods and then all of a sudden they're being like pummeled with boulders and rocks and shit and there's like this animal yelling and screaming and they catch like a glimpse of Bigfoot behind a tree, which is terrifying.
My favorite are the videos of Bigfoot running.
Yeah.
She's like so unserious because it's just this massive being just running, sprinting off through the woods.
It is very scary. I feel like the way that Bigfoot reacts to people is definitely shows that wants to be left alone.
It's also very animalistic. Like, well, not even really. Monkeys react that way.
Yeah, but
like their main reaction most times when they're like annoyed or bothered or angry is to throw shit.
Yeah, but monkeys
literally sometimes.
But monkeys are not, they're not shy. They will just sit there and look at you and they're pretty brazen in that. I feel like Bigfoot does not want to be bothered.
Do you think they would be that way in the wild? Like an orangutan?
Yeah, they're bold. Well, monkey, that's why they terrify me. They do not care. They are bold.
You think Bigfoot wouldn't care? He's huge. They are huge. I'm sure there's one.
That's what I'm trying to get at. I feel like they might be a gentle species that just wants to live. That boulder's like, hey, you're in my house. Leave me alone. There are these people in my house.
You've crossed the threshold.
Yeah. And it's effective because everything I've ever seen, those people pack up and get the hell out.
Would you not?
Oh, absolutely, 100%.
After it.
I would not.
Can we take a selfie?
I would not. So, believe it or not, there is another Bigfoot-like creature also in the Appalachians. And this one's called the Raven Mocker. Shut up. The Raven Mocker is another Cherokee legend. And it is a shape-shifting Bigfoot, which is, I think, incredibly scary.
Not as tall.
Standing 7 feet tall with black fur and solid white eyes. This type of Bigfoot is believed to inhabit. Oh my God, I am having a time. Woo! To inhabit Southwest Virginia. And is able to shift into any animal and can take on the appearance of an old man or woman.
Like a skinwalker.
Very much like a skinwalker.
Which is what I have a feeling like all of these could be.
Maybe. It could all be the Raven Mocker just pretending to be other things. I don't know.
That's impressive.
The Raven Mocker story scared me a lot when I read it. In its human form, the Raven Mocker can lurk among unsuspecting people and eat their hearts from their chest without ever leaving a mark.
Does it have like one of those little mosquito tubes?
I think it's more of like a magical, like sucking the essence more so than like eating the actual heart.
Death eater.
Yeah. Of all the Cherokee wizards or witches, the most dreaded is the Raven Mocker. So it is very much like the Skinwalker in that it's used to be a wizard or witch or is still a practicing wizard or witch and uses their power to be evil.
So when you say they rob the dying man of life, like, are they just going to people who are already dying or just everybody?
We'll find out. At night when someone is sick or dying in the settlement or town, the Raven Mocker goes to the place to take the life. He flies through the air in a fiery shape with arms outstretched like wings, with sparks trailing behind and a rushing sound like the noise of a strong wind. Every little while as he flies, he makes a cry like the cry of a raven when it dives in the air, not like the common raven cry. And those who hear are afraid because they know that some man's life will soon go out. When the Raven Mocker comes to the house, he finds others of his kind waiting there. And unless there is a doctor on guard who knows how to drive them away, they go inside, all invisible at this point, and frighten and torment the sick man or woman until they kill them. Sometimes to do this, they even lift him from the bed and throw him on the floor. But his friends who are with him think he is only struggling for breath. After the witches kill him, they take out his heart and eat it, and so add to their own lives as many days or years as they have taken from his. No one in the room can see them, and there is no mark where they take out the heart, but yet there is no heart left in the body. Magic. Only one who has the right medicine can recognize a raven mocker, and if such a man stays in the room with the sick person, these witches are afraid to come in and retreat as soon as they see him. Because when one of them is recognized in his right shape, he must die within 7 days.
Oh my.
Yeah. So.
Wait, what is the medicine?
They don't tell us.
You just have to be a soothsayer and just like get the.
I would imagine that the Cherokee medicine men would probably know.
Why would you tell everyone that?
Maybe it's an herb or something that's in, like,
also, imagine
it's hard to get, and they don't want other people to have it. I don't know.
Imagine we're in this room with this bed here, and someone that we love is dying on that bed, and then out of nowhere, an invisible force lifts that person up and throws them on the ground, and our first inclination is that they are simply out of breath.
Like, I would assume what? It's a raven mocker. I don't know.
I would be like, how the hell did you just levitate and get thrown to the floor?
I do not know. Oh, I'm just saying.
So many questions.
Yeah. I think this would be a good place for us to take a break while we diffuse a little bit of the information, and then we will come back and give
diffuse.
You a call. Yeah, I don't know. I don't even know what's happening anymore. That's a word.
Diffuse?
Yeah. Diffuse.
Diffuse. Borscht. I can't wait for you to pronounce this word that's coming up.
That's why I'm taking a break. All right, we will be right back after these words from somebody. All right. We're back from the break, and Emma has spent the entirety of it trying to convince me that I was not saying Appalachia correctly. So, please, tell the world.
Well, it depends. This is from the University of South Carolina, so they're in the region that we're speaking about. And there's a whole page that says, how do you pronounce, insert word. And it says, who cares? Well, lots of folks do. In fact, some people would say that if you come to the region and say Appalachia, you might as well turn around and make tracks to wherever you started from. In a short essay published 30 years ago in Appalachian Heritage, one Eastern Kentuckian wrote, what I finally came to understand is that Appalachia does not exist. At least it doesn't exist in the real world. The Appalachians exist. Even Appalachia exists. But Appalachia is a fiction.
Well, I'm not saying Leecha.
And there's a sign that says in about 40 miles north, the Appalachian Trail becomes the Appalachian Trail. If you still love it just as much, thank a volunteer maintainer.
All right. See, I guess it's
Appalachia.
I come from that region. Whatever.
The only reason I just don't want to say it wrong. And
no, but I think it's kind of similar with like New Orleans. There's people that call it New Orleans. People call it Nolens. People call it New Orleans.
Yeah,
I mean,
half of those are incorrect.
I understand that, but it just depends on your dialect and where you were raised.
You were raised in New Orleans, you have no reason to call it Nolens ever. And New Orleans is just wrong.
I would not.
Unless you're seeing House of the Rising Sun.
There is a house. All right, so we're back, and I've decided that I'm omitting that section of what I was going to talk about, so I don't have to try to say that word. And it was a really long story.
I think you should
that,
try to say it.
No, it was a really long story that doesn't really need to be included because we get the point of what these raven mockers do. And I truly hope that raven mocker is not the same as the skin word. Because I don't want to have said it 18,000 times and summon one of them.
It doesn't sound like it.
No. I mean, they sound very similar.
Yeah, just only in the shape-shifting, though.
Yeah. For those of you who are big fans of creepy things like that, there's we did do a Skinwalker episode that I thought was pretty terrifying because they are scary as heck. So go back, listen to past ones if you're just now joining us. I promise we don't always giggle this much.
I think we're just running off of fumes.
Yeah. All right, we are at number 5 on our list, and what do you know? We have another wolf. This is called a smoke wolf, and it is a massive, solid black canine with eyes as red as the sun.
Are there a lot of actual wolves in this region of the world?
I believe so. One witness who has heard smoke wolves howl and scream at night on his property describes them as pure evil, noting they kill simply for fun. The only thing known to deter a smoke wolf is the sound of rattling chains. Yeah. While the stories are all similar, it is unknown if the smoke wolf is simply a very large wolf or something more. Either way, I don't think I would want to encounter one since they are known to be aggressive and will attack if they feel threatened or, as mentioned above, just feel like doing it.
Isn't that just like a wolf?
No, wolves don't just attack people. They're actually...
They're portrayed very horribly in media. Yeah. Because they're not nice in anything.
Wolves will run away from people unless they're starving or feel threatened. They're
beautiful.
Not gonna... Yeah, they're not gonna intentionally come after you.
I wonder if there's, like, houses in this area that just have, like, instead of wind chimes, chains.
Maybe. There's so many weird ways to ward off spirits. What's the one that you can put rice on the floor and it'll pick it up, count it,
Yeah, well, there's even... Oh, was that Baba Yaga?
It might have been Baba Yaga.
Yeah, because she can only count to a certain number. So if you put higher than a certain number...
It was higher than 8, I think.
Yeah, she can't get in because she gets confused. There's one like
that.
She got
chicken legs and she's numb.
There's a thing like that in New Orleans where a lot of people paint the roof of their porches, like their overhang porches, blue.
Ours is blue.
It's painted that way because it's supposed to like represent the sky. So anything like evil or like an unwanted spirit... It's trying to, like, enter, we'll get confused and think it's a sky and go up.
It also keeps birds from building a nest.
Well, yeah. So, but, I mean, it's still New Orleans. Like,
well, it didn't work, and we'll talk about that later.
Worked for me.
All right, so, no story of this area would be complete without talking about the number one, numero uno, cryptid on our list, which is Mothman. He's probably one of the most well-known cryptids of all time, based on the movie
Mothman Prophecies.
Mothman Prophecies, if you have not seen it. He's not based on it, but that's what most people know about Mothman. So Mothman is known to exist in the Appalachians, whatever
Appalachians.
Emma said I need to say it like, and is a bat-like winged creature who was first documented in Point Pleasant, West Virginia, prior to the collapse of the Silver Bridge over the Ohio River in 1966. And sightings have been reported ever since. According to legend, the creature is 7 to 8 feet tall, has a 10-foot wingspan, and nests in caves. Mothman tends to be spotted just before a catastrophe. As legend has it, the flying Mothman mortified countless Point Pleasant residents in the late 1960s. And when a bridge collapsed, the creature was blamed for the deaths of 46 people. On November 12, 1966, in Clendenin, West Virginia, a group of gravediggers working in a cemetery spotted something strange. They glanced up from their work as something huge soared over their heads. It was a massive figure that was moving rapidly from tree to tree. The gravediggers would later describe this figure as a brown human being. Just 3 days after the gravediggers' initial report in nearby Point Pleasant, West Virginia, two couples noticed a white-winged creature about 6 or 7 feet tall standing in front of the car that they were all sitting in. Eyewitness Roger Scarberry and Steve Mallett told the local paper the Point Pleasant Register that the beast had bright red eyes about 6 inches apart, a wingspan of 10 feet, and the apparent urge to avoid the bright headlights of the car. According to the witnesses, this creature was able to fly at incredible speeds, perhaps as fast as 100 miles per hour. All of them agreed that the beast was a clumsy runner on the ground. They knew this only because it allegedly chased their vehicle to the outskirts of the town in the air, then scuttled into a nearby field and disappeared. Knowing how absurd this must have sounded to the local paper in a small Appalachian community in the 1960s, Scarberry insisted that the apparition couldn't have been a figment of his imagination. He assured the paper, "If I had seen it while by myself, I wouldn't have said anything, but there were four of us who saw it." At first, reporters were skeptical. In the papers, they called the Mothman a bird and a mysterious creature. However, they did print Mallett's description. It was like a man with wings, but more and more sightings after that were reported. In the Point Pleasant area over the next years, as the legend of the Mothman took shape. The Gettysburg Times reported 8 additional sightings in the short span of 3 days after the first claims. This included 2 young volunteer firefighters who said they saw a very large bird with large red eyes. Newell Partridge, a resident of Salem, West Virginia, claimed that he saw strange patterns appearing on his television screen one night, followed by a mysterious sound just outside of his home, and then saw the Mothman. So, I don't know how. I know that you want to believe in the Mothman.
I love Mothman.
But do you believe in the Mothman?
No.
No? I do.
Joe.
I mean, there have been sightings outside of.
As a concept.
I feel like there's been sightings outside of the United States also. Always before disaster. I know I've read that somewhere.
Like Godzilla and Mothra?
No, but Mothra is very similar. I really don't like the idea or the claim that some people have that Mothman is one of those big, giant cranes. Apparently they have big, giant cranes.
But not that big.
The people say that they can get huge, but I'm like, nothing is that big.
And also, I don't like... I've always, like, kind of thought of him as, like, he signals disaster, not that he brings disaster. Like, when you see him, it usually means that something, like, awful is about to happen. Not that, like, just when he shows up, he brings it with him or causes it himself.
There's been some talk that they think... People think that he might be, like, some kind of a time-traveling alien... And that, no, I'm serious, and that knows that the bad things are going to happen because he's already seen what happens and then possibly comes to try and help. But nobody will listen because they're all too busy being afraid and running away.
Well, yeah, like the first sighting of him in real life is exactly what happens in the movie.
Yeah.
Like the bridge collapse.
Yeah, that movie was perfectly
And they
retold.
Just see him. But yeah. I maybe that's just me rewriting it because I don't like to think that he's evil. I think it was more like a, not like a prophecy. What do you like call those?
What do you mean?
Like signals of like bad, like an omen.
Oh yeah.
Like people who think that like every time you see like a gaggle or like a murder of crows, like death is near. I don't necessarily think they bring death. I think they're just drawn to it.
Yeah. And I mean, animals have extra keen senses mm-hmm. and are
crows especially they can able, smell death like
yeah
miles and miles away
and are able to pick up on changes in vibration and sound waves and all of those things that who knows maybe that bridge had been making noises that were imperceptible to people
right
but that doesn't explain why the hell and it's then, a giant big giant Mothman though
and in the 1960s I mean how great were bridges.
There's still bridges today, I think, that
I feel like so many
built
have just
a long
gotten
time
reinforced
ago.
Over the years.
I don't know.
That it's still horrible. So many people died.
It was
literally why I'm scared of bridges. But.
Terrible.
I don't know. I like Mothman. I want a Mothman tattoo.
Yeah, I like Mothman. Pretty cool. Somebody had a it was the Two Girls One Ghost podcast. They did a sexiest cryptid contest and Mothman won.
Yeah,
you know, Mothman's the only one with an actual
bod,
male body. Well, Wolfman's pretty buff.
And Bigfoot, he's ripped, especially in the Slim Jim commercials.
Yeah,
he is
Sasquatch.
He's ripped. I don't know. I think there's like this weird, like cult-like following behind Mothman now.
Mothman and Bigfoot definitely get the most,
fanfare,
for sure.
As they should. They're the two best.
Definitely. All right, so here is another one. I'm telling you, there are so many that I think I'm canceling the camping trip I had planned in my head.
Well, are you going to go camp here? In this region of the United States?
I wanted to, but now I don't.
So many people do.
I know, but lots of people go and don't make it.
Well, yeah, so many people get lost in the mountains, period. That's a whole other episode we could talk about.
All right, so our next one is called the Grafton Monster, and it was first spotted in West Virginia in the 1950s and is described as a massive bipedal creature with short fur and is estimated to weigh between 1,000 and 1,500 pounds and has big, broad shoulders. That is massive. Yeah. That's what, hippo size?
Are they even that big?
I think they can be.
I don't know what that could be compared to.
Well, look it up.
Like a gorilla? How big are gorillas?
Oh.
How much do hippos weigh? Oh my god.
2,000 pounds. Yeah.
An adult male is 3,300 to 4,000 pounds.
All right, so a very small hippo.
And an adult female is 2,900 to 3,300 pounds.
Yeah.
Oh my. Yeah,
either way, this would be like
number one on worst animals ever.
Very large. Look up animals that weigh between 1,000 and 1,500 pounds, and we'll have some comparison, and I'll read some more. Okay. Okay, so this monster is claimed to be a large humanoid creature with no visible head and covered in slick, white, seal-like skin, which is really gross.
Seal-like?
Mm-hmm.
Or just like slippery?
Or just like really slippery. Smooth.
Rubber.
Smooth and slick. All right, what do you got?
Let's see. Bison.
Okay.
But typically on the low end, 930 pounds, so even not like touching it. Yaks. Dairy cows. Manatees.
Okay.
Also can be really small. Polar bears. Camels. And moose.
All right.
So literally just massive. And crocodiles.
Oh my gosh, that's terrifying. Yeah. I hate that.
It just makes me so much more afraid of hippos.
Yeah. They're bigger than all of them.
They're so much bigger.
Yeah. All right, so it is unclear if this animal cryptid doesn't have a head or if its head is simply located very close to its chest.
Like it has no neck?
Yeah, like its head's tucked way under. I just tucked my head under when I said that. Sorry if you lost my voice. In an article by the Grafton Sentinel published on June 18, 1964, an anonymous teenager claimed the creature was 9 feet tall and about 4 feet wide.
Built like a fridge.
Let's see. There's other encounters where people say they were driving home when they suddenly encountered a large white creature on the right-hand side of the road, which was the side the Tigert River was located. So this man named Cockrell,
Robert
Cockrell, said the creature was lumbering around the side of the road while a low whistling noise was being emitted from further away in the direction of the river. Cockrell at the time had no explanation for the noise, but later a man who studies UFOs, Gray Barker, said he believed the creature to be extraterrestrial in origin, suggesting that the noise was being emitted from the creature's spaceship. Surprised by the encounter, Cockrell initially slowed down and he was able to see the creature was very large and appeared to be made entirely of muscle.
Yeah, let me slow down.
It also had white seal-like fur and disturbingly didn't appear to have a visible head. The creature moved quickly out of view, and upon realizing that the white obstruction was a living creature, Cockrell quickly accelerated down the road until he reached home. Once home, he called two of his friends, Jerry Morse and Jim Mauser, and explained his sighting to them. He asked them to come with him to the location of the sighting in order to investigate further. They agreed, but when they returned to the site, all they were able to find was trampled grass and a low whistling sound that seemed to follow them around the site. The next day at work, Cockrell mentioned to his editor at the Grafton Sentinel of what he had seen, but the editor did not take the sighting seriously. Cockrell assumed that nothing more would come of his sighting after that point. His friends, however, were fascinated with the idea of a monster on the loose and went around town telling as many people as they could. Quickly, as people often do, they formed monster hunting parties, predominantly made up of local teams armed with baseball bats or whatever they could find. These roving groups of teens scoured Riverside Drive near where Cockrell had initially seen the creature. And soon, new sightings were being reported.
What?
I think they're going to...
You hear this description of an animal.
You're going to beat it with a bat.
And you bring a bat?
Mm-hmm.
You better bring...
Like an elephant gun?
Like a freaking rocket launcher.
Yeah. Well, and it wasn't even doing anything. Why would you bring... Why would you want to hurt it?
And also, hearing like the seal, like, fur, I have
skin.
A different... Because they said it was like... It had like seal-like fur. That's what Cockrell described it as.
So, like, short and...
Just, like, really, yeah. Like, short and, like, buzz cutty.
I also think of, like, really thick...
Sleek.
Like, really thick skin.
Yeah. Like a whale.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Because of the sudden attention to the monster and the newly formed monster hunting groups, the Grafton Sentinel interviewed some of the teenagers and produced an article about the creature on June 18th, 1964, titled... Teenage Monster Hunting Party's Latest Activity on Grafton Scene. They had more than 20 sightings reported from that monster hunt. And Robert Cockrell interviewed, when he was interviewed, he said this. I have seen the creature called the Grafton Monster several times when I was a young man, and it is very real. What are you looking at me like that for?
Why is... Just continue.
Okay.
Talk later.
My first encounter, I was with my father cutting wood. We had finished and we were loading the truck when our two dogs started barking. We stood there and listened. Something was walking, getting closer. My dad told me to get the gun from the cab. He carried a double barrel 10 gauge with 000 buckshot. No, that makes, and it means nothing to me.
Buckshot? Yeah. This is what you shoot a deer with.
Whatever it was had picked up its pace and continued towards us. All we knew for sure was it was big and wasn't scared of us, the dogs, or the chainsaws. It stopped about 50, 55 yards from us in the trees and went quiet. My dad pulled both hammers back and stood in front of me, told me to be ready. The next thing that happened, I'll never forget. It stepped out, looked at us, took three strides in our direction, turned and walked back into the tree line. That was my first sighting of the beast, and I'll never forget it. My second encounter was about 2 months later at night, fishing alone. This would be so scary. I spotted him on the opposite bank and I got the hell out of the area. I saw the monster near the river early in the morning. It saw me and instantly froze. It did not move. I was fishing at the time and left all my gear there and started to run away. As I ran and turned, I saw that it too... Oh, excuse me. I don't know what that was. I got scared, turned away, and started running off. As I got near my truck and began opening the door, I heard a whooshing sound and a bright light appear over the tree line. I drove off and got my gear 2 days later. So,
I don't believe this, man.
There are definitely some timeline conflicting stories, but...
Only because, like, he acted so confused when he mm-hmm. saw it on the road.
Yeah.
But apparently you've had lifelong interactions with this being.
Yep.
A little
sus.
A little suspicious.
I just
Robert.
I'm just thinking that's a really impressive spaceship that can handle all 1,500 pounds of this naked Sasquatch.
Well, I mean, I guess like most cryptids are probably... I don't know if I'd call them extraterrestrial. A lot of people think that.
I mean,
people think Bigfoot's like an alien.
Doesn't extraterrestrial just have like a outside of the normal?
Like, oh, I meant like outside of our realm of like our planet.
I don't know. All I know is that we are constantly pulling new species of things out of oceans and finding animals deep in the Amazon rainforest that we thought were extinct
like
for forever.
Ice caps get like thawed.
Right. I mean, there's so much... So much densely populated woods and forest in that area that humans probably can't get all the way into. Who knows what's inside there? There are so many species of animals and things that we probably have not discovered.
I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. Or that we may never discover because they don't want to be around us. I mean,
it's probably for the best.
I don't, like...
Why do we have to always go looking for it? Like, just let it live.
Curiosity,
like, the
I
people
guess.
Who want to, like, find out what's at the bottom of the ocean or, like, the and like undiscovered parts of the ocean. Like, yeah, it'd be cool to see or like learn, but I'm not gonna be the person who goes to find out.
Well, no, because like, they haven't built a ship that can do it yet, right? There. No, it would be scary.
Like, we know what's in some parts of the ocean, but the ocean's too vast. Probably just like a lot of this area for teams of people to ever discover all of it.
Yeah, that's what I was, you know, kind of getting at. And look at some of the things we do know that exist and how cool and weird they are. Mm-hmm. And I think it's completely plausible that there could be a Bigfoot or
there's Wendigos something. In Appalachia too. I think that might be like where the Wendigo like originated. There's a lot of Wendigo stories in Appalachia.
Isn't a Wendigo just a werewolf?
No, the Wendigo is kind of like a skinwalker, but it has like that really distinct like cry.
Maybe one of the other things that I listed were.
I feel like a lot of these things could easily be one of like the other ones that you listed.
They could all be the Ravenmocker, like you said, with all the
except Bigfoot and Mothman.
Unless the Ravenmocker's dressing up like Bigfoot sometimes. Who knows?
Yeah, but vastly different like outcomes.
I don't know. All I know is that I, like you, will probably think twice before my next camping trip.
I'm like, what? As if I'm going to have a next camping trip. I don't do that.
I don't know if I want to go. I mean, I kind of still want to go because I think it'd be beautiful.
Not there. I also think, like, people who aren't from Appalachia who, like, go there specifically to seek stuff like this out are, like, kind of disrespectful. Because a lot of this region of the United States is, like, very sacred land with, like, people who... A lot of Appalachia is very religious because there are... I mean, the guy that Dad worked... Or the girl that Dad worked with, like... Her dad has to drive 2 to 3 hours to get cell phone service to call her. Like, that's just where they live.
Well, that's probably you're in not the religion, though.
No, but also, like, when you grow up in, like, these small communities where it's only those people. Yeah. And you, like, see the same people from, like, birth to death. There's just very, like, sacred
I feel like I could be practices. Respectful about it.
Yeah, but I don't think you should go there, like, looking for Mothman.
Tourism is probably a
tourism. Yes, big way you shouldn't like go out in the Appalachian mountains at midnight trying to find Wolfman. That's all I'm gonna say. I don't think you should do that.
I came here all the time to New Orleans looking
to find ghosts, Mom.
What's the difference?
There's a big difference.
There isn't. Oh, speaking of
especially
ghosts.
Like when you tie in the Native American like history too, you can do it respectfully. But I feel like probably a lot of people like the shows that we see. Like the Bigfoot hunters and stuff. It's not.
I feel like I'd be pretty
the most respectful way to go about things.
Yeah. Should we talk about my night terrors and ghostly experiences since moving, or should we say that for another time?
Go for it.
I feel like we have to now. So congratulations if you've stuck around this long, you get a little treat. So we have lived here now since November, and I've talked about this before. I have horrible night terrors, and since moving here up until 3 weeks ago, I had night terrors every single day, literally every day, minus the time that we went back home to visit and back up north. Keep calling it home. It's not home anymore. Back up north to visit, and I didn't have a single one there. Get back here in New Orleans, night one from being back from vacation, and I started having them again. So they've been pretty intense and terrible, and about 3 weeks ago, I started having a different version of the same one. It's always this big black mass on the side of my bed that's coming up and getting progressively closer to me, like night after night. And one of the last nights that it happened, there was this man. I want to say man, but more like a boy. I'm pretty young. And standing kind of like up against my wall. First time that I'd seen like an actual, what I would call like an actual bodied thing instead of just a black mist or mass, and kept getting closer and closer
amorphous
and closer.
Blob.
Yeah. Until it was like super duper close to my bed and was like looming over me. Super scary. Hated every minute of it.
Like
not
the
a big
of the Grinch.
Oh no, it was not like that. Not a fan. And for some reason no one said the name. I don't know where it came from, but I got the name Nathan or Nathaniel, like, very clearly. and thought about it all the next day when I was telling Emma and her dad, like, you know, this happened and I'm so over it. I'm tired. I can't sleep. And I Googled if anybody named Nathan or Nathaniel, I think it's Nathaniel. That's the one that just keeps popping out as more, as more right. And I couldn't find anybody in this area that has been killed or passed away with that name. I looked at the cemeteries, like, cause you can look up online and they'll tell you who's buried. Didn't find anything. And so the next night, or that night, when I got ready to go to bed, and when I say I was exhausted, I'm not kidding. I was being woken up like every hour and a half, 2 hours. And I sat on the side of the bed and I was like, listen, Nathaniel, I'm really tired. Can you just let me have a good night's sleep tonight? Because I'm over it. I just need to sleep. Y'all, when I tell you that up until last night, because I talked about it the other day, and I shouldn't have, and I shouldn't be doing it now, I had not had a night terror. It was like 3 weeks straight. And going from 4 months straight to not for 3 weeks was absolutely amazing. So, got to figure out what or who in the hell Nathaniel is. Because I would like to help them get some peace. And maybe we just need to establish some firm boundaries. Like,
I think you did.
No, because he came back. I told you, last night I had it.
His name, and he thought he was welcome again.
Yeah, so I'll have to make sure I say my nightly affirmations of don't bother me again tonight. But I do think we have something happening.
Okay, stop. Because I have to be here by myself for a week, which is already terrifying.
Are you telling people that?
What? Yeah, okay. Good luck. Good luck. People, if you get any funny ideas, good fucking luck.
Well, they don't even know when we're recording this.
Got shooters on this block. Don't try to mess with me.
Jeez. All right. Well, on that note, anyway, I thought I would share a little bit of what I think is our possible experience. At least my experience, as I know it to be true.
My night terrors are just me sweating.
Yeah, it does get really hot in here.
So bad.
Very bad. All right. Well, as Emma mentioned, I will be out of commission for a few days because I'm going to Cardinals opening day.
Now they have direct timeline.
Maybe we'll have to edit out this part.
No, we're good. I don't care.
Well, Nick and Mandy are here and Chris and Lauren. And
oh my, yeah, let's just name drop everybody to make me more accessible.
What are you?
Here's the names of our neighbors.
I didn't say they were our neighbors. Block.
Oh, why are they going to be here? Anyways.
Your friends in New Orleans is what I was going to say.
Okay.
We'll go back and take that part out.
That's fine.
Lord.
That's fine.
Emma had to get up early today for work, so she's really cranky right now.
I'm cloping. I'm tired.
Yeah. But thanks for listening, and hopefully we will be able to get another episode. I'm just going to work on some true crime stuff to bring to you.
I don't know if y'all are ready, but the Lori Vallow / Chad Daybell trial starts I don't know if it's the first or second week of April. It's coming soon. And I believe it's a death penalty trial.
Yeah, it should be. Are you going to cover some of that?
Yeah, I'm going to try to. Okay. I was going to do that like recently, but it's like going to be a big one to tackle because there's a lot to talk about.
It'd be nice to start it though, and then you can keep up with the do some updates as it is unfolding in real time. But, all right, well, thank you for listening to Monsters and Mixers. I hope you enjoyed your trip to the Appalachian Trails and all the creepy things. I'll say it how I say it. And please follow us on our socials, on Facebook at Monsters and Mixers Pod, on Twitter at Monsters Mixers, and on Instagram at Monsters and Mixers Podcast.
Like and follow us on your preferred listening platform, leave a 5-star rating, and send us those stories via email at monstersandmixers2@gmail.com or at one of the socials mentioned.
Yeah, and thank you to the people who have recently started following us on Spotify, because I got a notification today, and we've got almost 100 followers on Spotify, nice. Subscribers. So, if that's one of you, thank you. If you subscribe somewhere else, thank you.
If there are any true crime stories that you would like to see like highlighted, also send them to me too. I'm always looking for more.
Yeah, and I live for hearing scary stories, so if you have any of your own scary encounters, please give them to me. I'm running out of books to read. All right. See you next time when we dive into another terrifying tale and maybe concoct a new delicious drink to wash down the horror. Now get out there and meet some ghosts.
And make some toasts.